Well, first of all, I would like to thank the organizers for such a great opportunity, for invitation and a possibility to speak here. The topic of my talk is to discuss the following result, which is a joint work with Hui Hu, Anna Talitska, and myself. So this is just a theorem which claims that given a compact, smooth Riemannian manifold, you can certainly think of this manifold as being C-infinity smooth, of dimension bigger or equal than 3, there exists a C-infinity flow which preserves volume, has non-zero Lyapunov exponents almost everywhere, and of course by saying this I mean non-zero Lyapunov exponents except the direction of the flow where the Lyapunov exponents is always zero, and which is Bernoulli. So that's kind of the main result. What I would like to say maybe before I go into, I wouldn't be able to give you a complete proof, but I could try to kind of give you an idea how to prove this result. But maybe before I just tell you a little bit of the very short history of what this problem is all about and why one might be interested in this. And I would like to ask, start with a question on, do we know of any flow on a compact manifold which preserves volume, which has non-zero Lyapunov exponents, not even discuss the question of being Bernoulli. And, well, the first example that one can immediately mention is Anosov flows. And there are two types of them. One is that it's a special flow over an Anosov diffeomorphism, so, and that's why I put aside the question of being ergodic, so I don't want to discuss this, but this is a flow which, if you start with an Anosov diffeomorphism preserving volume, then the corresponding flow will preserve volume and will have non-zero Lyapunov exponents. Another much more interesting example in a sense are geodetic flows on negatively curved manifolds and known to be having non-zero exponents and Bernoulli, in fact. Then if you want to study flow, to study flows which are not Anosov, which really, Anosov flows have non-zero Lyapunov exponents, but they have much more rigid structure. So we want to abandon this structure and discuss existence of flow which really have non-zero exponents and nothing, no more rigid structures. Then the first example of this flow was constructed in my early paper in the beginning of 70s, and this is a flow on a 3 manifold which has non-zero Lyapunov exponents. This flow is also Bernoulli and preserves volume. Now, the idea to build such a flow, which I'm not going to discuss in details but just mention quickly, is that you start from an Anosov flow, and that's all we have in our disposal, not that much. And then you use a procedure which is now well known as a slowdown at a given point. So you fix a point such that the trajectory through this point is non-periodic, and then you slow down the time in a small neighborhood of this point. And if you do it in some special way, then you can create non-zero exponent. You spoil Anosov structure, so it's not any longer Anosov flow. However, it would still have non-zero Lyapunov exponent, and then doing this carefully, you create a flow which preserves volume. So that's essentially the construction, and I will talk about slowing down procedure later on. I will describe it in more detail. Well, then, of course, there is a counterpart of what I'm talking about, which are systems with discrete times or diffeomorphisms. And one can pose a question of existence of diffeomorphism with non-zero Lyapunov exponent on any manifold. In this case, of course, you should start for a manifold whose dimension is 2 and higher, while for the case of flows, you start with 3 and higher, of course. And the recent result, which in a sense solves this problem, and that's been kind of a long-standing problem, is a result of my joint work with Dima Dolgopyat, which claimed that the very same theorem that I mentioned for flows holds for diffeomorphisms. So the complete counterpart for diffeomorphisms, namely, any manifold of dimension bigger or equal than 2 admits a diffeomorphism, volume preserving diffeomorphism, with non-zero Lyapunov exponent, which is Bernoulli. So you give me a manifold, and I can build a diffeomorphism. And according to the theorem which I would like to describe, you give me a manifold of dimension bigger than 3, and I build a flow, or you can say a vector field. Well, then the question is, how many of those guys we have? And we have at least one. Is there more than that? Well, the problem in this sense should be separated, and diffeomorphism should be treated probably differently than flows. In case of diffeomorphisms, all we know at the moment, I mean, of course, anosov diffeomorphism for an open set. So if you start from anosov and perturbed, then you get again an anosov diffeomorphism, everything is fine. However, if you start from a diffeomorphism and you only know that it has non-zero Lyapunov exponent, we don't know what's going to happen when we perturb. For example, what if we start from the one constructed in our paper with Dima and you perturb it? I have no idea what's going to happen. What I do know that in a small neighborhood of that particular diffeomorphism, due to its construction, you can find a infinitely co-dimension submanifold of systems on which you still have non-zero Lyapunov exponent. So it doesn't come alone, it comes with something, but the something is very, very small. I mean, it's not at all typical, at least we don't know whether it comes in a more substantial way. It does come in some along some submanifold. And if I have time, I will tell you how to build such a submanifold. The same is true for flows, and I don't know anything more than that. The only substantial result showing that there is a persistent a collection of systems with non-zero Lyapunov exponent is based on a recent discoveries in partially hyperbolic system, in particular on results of Shoup and Wilkinson, and some results around that, which claim that if you consider any tori, and it's only for tori, then any tori admits an open set of diffeomorphism with non-zero Lyapunov exponents, which are not anosov. So that's a recent result of Amy, I guess, Marcella, there's a number of authors, I'm sorry if I don't remember all, if I don't pronounce all of them, but essentially, it's a combination of results on the basis of which is the paper of Shoup and Wilkinson, and then it's a combination of some results of Dolgopyat and Wilkinson, Keith Burns, Dolgopyat, myself, and some others. And just building on it, you can prove this result. And that's the only, I mean, to the best of my knowledge, the only result claiming that genericity of systems with non-zero Lyapunov exponents so far. Nothing like that is known for flows, even on some simple manifolds. And this would be a great question to at least try to build some substantial presence of systems with non-zero Lyapunov exponents for the flow case. And I don't know anything about that. Okay. Now, let me start explaining how to build such an example of the flow. And for that reason, I would like again go back to this result and tell you that on the bottom of it lies a construction that goes back to Katok, who first solved the very same problem for surfaces. So he proved this result for two-dimensional case. And he came up with a construction, one of the first construction of a diffeomorphism with non-zero Lyapunov exponents. So if this was a construction for flows with non-zero Lyapunov, Katok has a construction of diffeomorphism with non-zero Lyapunov exponents. And let me, I mean, I'm pretty much sure that part of this audience knows this construction very well, but I briefly go over it because I need it for my purpose. So the construction starts from a linear automorphism of a torus, which is an anosov automorphism. And the reason I choose this one is that it has four fixed points, unlike the classical 1-2-1-1-1, which has only two. So you just choose this one. It has four fixed points. So you take any of them, and you consider a small disk of a very small radius around each of these points. And if you look at this disk, and you consider, I mean, it's a linear map, so each point is just a hyperbolic fixed point. So what you observe is that our linear automorphism is nothing else but a time-one map of a flow, local flow, around this point. And the flow is given by this differential equation, where alpha is an eigenvalue of the corresponding matrix. So the picture, it's much easier to understand by drawing a picture. So the picture is the following. Here's a linear, here's what you see nearby a hyperbolic fixed point. So what I would like to do, I would like to take this system of differential equation and I change it by multiplying the right-hand side part of the equation by a function psi, which depends on the square on the symmetric sum. So it only depends on the radius nearby. So that is the procedure which is known as the slowdown of trajectories. So if you choose a function psi, and here's roughly graph of this function, so it tends to zero when you approach this point, and then it becomes kind of a normal, it's just a one when you're outside. So outside of a small neighborhood, this procedure does not change the map. So our new diffeomorphism is not at all close to the old one. I mean, it's a big change. It's a substantial change. It's what we call the surgery of Anosov diffeomorphism. But what happened is that outside of this very small disk, four small disks, the system is still linear Anosov diffeomorphism. And only inside of it, the time the trajectory spans near the fixed point increases, and increases substantially. So the closer you to this fixed point, the longer you stay with inside of this neighborhood before you exit it. So that's essentially what this procedure does. Nothing more than that. And here are some requirements of this function, so the construction that I'm going to describe will go through. So once we have such a procedure, I would like to look at the new diffeomorphism. What do I know about the new diffeomorphism? And it's easy to prove, I mean, it's not such a big deal to explain that this new diffeomorphism in a small neighborhood is actually conjugate to the old one. And using this fact, you can prove, so this, what happened is that the system outside of this four small boxes is linear, hyperbolic. It's only when it's inside when you can get if you take a vector which, let's say, used to be an expanding vector for the Anosov diffeomorphism, automorphism, and you get inside of the small disk, what happens is that its length does not decrease. It only rotates, but it rotates in the direction in the time direction. So essentially nothing bad is happening to it. I mean, it does not grow as quickly as it used to, but it does not shrink, and what's most important, it does not change its direction towards the stable one. That allows you to show that the system has non-zero Lyapunov exponents almost everywhere. That's the main reason for that. However, it's not any longer Anosov, and unfortunately, it does not preserve volume, area. It preserves a measure which is smooth with respect to area, but it has infinite densities at these fixed points. So therefore, you need to do one more step. So here is the formula for the density of the area of the invariant measure. So what you want to do now is you want to add one more perturbation to the old one. And again, it's easier to describe it by a picture. What you basically do, you push the mass away from the critical point. So the trajectory, instead of being hyperbolic, becomes kind of, you know, like a little wave. And you should do it carefully. Everything can be done actually analytically. So you can write down formulas which would allow you to describe this procedure. And once you combine it with the previous one, what is going to happen, you're going to get a diffeomorphism, which again, outside is still an osmosis. Inside, it changes, it makes some changes. But the new system has non-zero Lyapunov exponent and already preserves area. So that's what you can gain by making this additional perturbation. And of course, you do it at every four, at the small neighborhood of every of these fixed points. So that's essentially the construction of a diffeomorphism on a torus. So far, we sit on a torus and we have four fixed points. And now, what is the next step is that you, from the torus, by using the standard branching cover, you go to a sphere. And you use these two of the fixed points to do this. I mean, this is a standard topological procedure. And you end up, and it is described by this formula, so everything can be essentially done analytically. What happened is that now you obtain a C-infinity diffeomorphism on a sphere, which has this critical point, and it's a system with non-zero Lyapunov exponent, and preserves area, Bernoulli, etc. So, I mean, everything is what you want. But now you are on a sphere. So that's, in fact, the first example of a system with non-zero Lyapunov exponents on a manifold where anosmosis diffeomorphisms do not exist, while the system with non-zero exponents do exist. So that's already something. Analytic? Not in this for fixed points. You lose analyticism. I have to be careful. He is a guy. No, this is not done yet. So it should be a different construction. This does not give you. Okay, so the next step is to blow out one point on a sphere and obtain the very same map, diffeomorphism with non-zero exponent preserving, area preserving on a disk, which would have these three critical points. So that's the picture here. And the reason you want it on a disk is because now, once you have an any surface, that the disk can be embedded into the surface. So, I mean, you take a surface, you cut it in a, you know, obvious ways, you get a disk, and the boundary goes into those cuts. I mean, and I don't want to go into this, I mean, that's, everybody knows. And such a procedure of the topological embedding carries over a diffeomorphism onto, would carry a diffeomorphism onto a diffeomorphism on a surface, provided the diffeomorphism on a boundary is identity and the derivative, or all the derivative decays quickly when you approach the boundary. And that's exactly what you can arrange here. And that's the way to build a diffeomorphism with non-zero exponents on any surface. So that's essentially Katov's construction. But I don't want to do the last step, and I want to consider a diffeomorphism of the disk. This is a starting point for my construction. Okay. So what I want to do, I want to look at the properties of the map G. The map G is a map on the disk. Okay. So what properties does it have? Well, it's, as I mentioned, it's C-infinity area preserving this non-zero Lyapunov exponents, Bernoulli, etc. Now, it's uniformly hyperbolic outside of the boundary of the disk, and the three critical points, I mean, small neighborhoods of the critical point. In all the remaining part, this is a uniformly hyperbolic map. Because it has non-zero Lyapunov exponents almost everywhere, you can construct global, stable, and unstable foliations. Now, it's known that those foliations are usually bad guys and behave in kind of a measurable way. However, in this particular example, it can be shown that they form a nice continuous foliation. So it's not; they are not as bad as they would have been in a general. You would expect it in a general case. So in this particular case, they are not as bad. In And I'm going to use this fact later on when I will describe some particular properties of my systems. Now, this property is the most crucial one for my construction. And a property is that in a small neighborhood of the boundary, the map is a time, can be viewed as a time-bound map of a local flow. So there is some vector field in a small neighborhood which is described, which is given, such that the map is just a flow. The time varies from minus 2 to 2 or whatever. I mean, it doesn't matter. And so that when you take time 1, you get exactly our diffeomorphism in the small neighborhood. Okay. So that's what we know. And now I'm going to start working on the construction. And the first step is to show that the diffeomorphism that we just described is diffeotopic to the identity map on the disk. And for that, we need to construct a diffeotopy. So, it's not such a big deal, but it would have some particular properties that I need, and that would make it a little bit less trivial than otherwise. So, the third property shows that it connects identity with our map. The second one shows that it can be obtained, that every map in the homotopy can be obtained as a local flow in a small neighborhood. This is area preserving, and that's an important part of the homotopy, diffeotopy that I would like to construct. And the last property is that on the boundary it behaves, all the derivatives are fixed. They're known. Well, I briefly describe how to build such a diffeotopy. The major part of it is to use the well-known lemma of Smale, which tells us that if you have an arbitrary set of maps in C-infinity diffeomorphism is a unit square, and the classical Smale lemma deals with square, but the proof works absolutely without any changes for the disk, so I would like to apply it to a disk, of course. Such that there are identity on the boundary, and that's what we have. I mean, if you consider the map G hat to the minus 1, I was going to have a map which would be identity on the boundary. And such that, so we have such a collection in the space of C infinity diffeomorphism that this is a contractible to a point. I mean, this is a known lemma by Smale. The way I'm going to use this lemma is to start with a diffeomorphism G and G hat to the minus 1. And so I will be in the situation of Smale lemma, and then I get the diffeotopy from Smale lemma, and that gives me essentially everything, except Smale lemma does not tell me that the diffeotopy that you construct would preserve area. That's the only problem I actually have to look at. Otherwise, it is immediately corollary from Smale lemma. And to make sure that I can correct this diffeotopy into the one that I need, I use another well-known lemma, which essentially goes back to Moser. It's a Moser lemma, but I would like to use it in the form of Katok. It's written in the book of... I think it's in your book with Hasselblad. Am I right? And I'm not 100% familiar with his history. I'm sorry. That's what I'm saying. I'm not 100% sure about the history and references. Thanks. That's better now, I hope. Okay, so what it says, anyway, what it says that if you have two families of volume forms on a disk and such that they agree on a neighborhood of the boundary, and they agree for t close to 0 and t close to 1, then you can construct you can connect them by homeotopy so that then you can go from one to another one. So if you use this fact, and it can be done in a C infinity way. So if you use this fact, that then what you have to do is you have to start with the standard ones, with the area, and that's what we actually need. And the one which is preserved by our previous diffeotopy, the volume form which is produced by our diffeotopy, which is invariant our diffeotopy, and then you connect them by this one, by the new one. And once you do this, this is the correction that you need to make to obtain a diffeotopy which would not just connect our map with identity, but also do it through area preserving. So that's kind of a simple idea. Okay, anyway. So that's all the preparations I needed in order to describe the whole construction. And let me start this construction with the following. I mean, the proof is split into three parts. You have to consider separately the case when the dimension of the manifold is 3, when it's 4, and then it's 5 and bigger. I mean, this is well known. For some reason, that's what you should do. So let me start with the case when the dimension is bigger or equal than 5. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to look at the product map of the Katok diffeomorphism and a linear automorphism of the n minus 3 dimensional torus. And that's where I use the fact that dimension is bigger or equal than 5. So 2 goes to the disk, and at least, this would make some sense. So let me consider this manifold, consider this diffeomorphism that acts on this manifold. And the next step is I would like to consider a flow which is just a suspension flow over this map with a constant roof function. So what I have? I have a manifold, a very particular manifold, which is the manifold G2 times Tn minus 3 factorized by identifications. Okay? So this is the manifold K of the suspension flow. It's a very particular manifold. And on that manifold, I have a vector field, which is a trivial one, of the suspension flow. Now, what I'm going to do with this? And the whole idea is the following, that the first step is that this manifold can be embedded into a ball. So all the identifications and boundary will go into the boundary of the ball. This is a result by Michabry. The second step is that this manifold, the ball can be embedded into any given manifold of dimension bigger or equal than 5. And this is a result by Katok. And these two are topological statements, essentially. So if you have this embedding of our particular manifold K into our given manifold M, then you want to carry over the vector field that you had on this particular manifold onto a vector field on this of the given manifold M. And to be able to do it, all you have to make sure is that this vector field vanishes on the boundary of our manifold. And the derivative, again becomes close to 0. Now, the vector field Z does not have this property, of course, so it cannot be carried over to a given manifold. So a naive idea would be that, okay, what you have? You have a manifold and you have a vector field on this manifold which does not vanish on the boundary. Okay, let's multiply it by a function and make it 0 on the boundary. And it looks like that's all you have to do. And unfortunately, it doesn't work because the new vector field does not satisfy the identification relation. It's not going to be a nice vector field on the original manifold. It can't do it. So that's one of the problems here, immediately. So the whole idea of the whole strategy now is start with Z and produce something else which will be well defined on this manifold with identification. So it would have 0 on the boundary, and also will be you know, that had non-zero Lyapunov exponent and Bernoulli. So that's what we need, and also preserves Volta. So that's essentially what I would like to do. I would like to start with Z and change it to something else. And here's the way I'm going to do it. So the way to do it is to, still consider a function alpha, which will vanish the vector field on the boundary. So it will be zero with all its partial derivative on the boundary. It will be positive outside, and it will be equal to 1 outside of a small neighborhood of the boundary. And then, once I have such a function, I claim that the vector field X, which is defined by a formula, it's analytic formula for the vector field, is the one that we need. It would have all the properties we need. And this vector field uses the homotopy that I just constructed. So that's, at some point I can tell you, okay, here is the formula. All we have to do is just to check that the vector fields are constructed satisfy all the properties. And that's it. That's essentially it. The rest is just a technical fact of proving that a given vector field, because it's given by explicit formula, the rest is just to prove it. Of course, it's not immediately, not absolutely trivial, and so I'd like to guide you through why it has all the properties we needed. First of all, I would like to mention that once we sit on a small neighborhood of the boundary, and then using the properties of the diffeotopy that I talked about, the vector field X becomes, has a very simple formula, is given by a very simple formula, and both parts here vanishes on the boundary with derivatives, and derivatives also vanishes and quickly approach zero, and therefore it does have the property that on the boundary it is exactly what we needed. Moreover, there is a simple calculation that shows that the vector field X defined by this formula is actually well defined. So it grants all the identification that we have. And this is a simple argument. This is the identification due to suspension. And so what you do, you want to prove this relationship, and this is a simple calculation. It starts with the left-hand side and ends with the right-hand side, and it uses all the properties of the diffeotopy that I just described. It's connected the two maps. So that's essentially what it does. So what we have formally is a vector field which is well defined on the suspension manifold, and it vanishes on the boundary of this manifold. And what remains to show is that it preserves volume, and it has non-zero Lyapunov exponent, and it's Bernoulli. That's the three facts that I would like to discuss. Well, first of all, the question is why it preserves volume. For that, I would like to give you a little bit different description of that vector field, and actually it will tell you how did we come up with such a formula. Of course, the formula did not come from nothing. There was a way to get it, and the way is the following. So you start with a diffeomorphism A of the torus, and you can see there's a suspension flow HT on over A, and that is a constant roof function, and it gives you another suspension manifold, which I denote by L, and now you consider a new manifold, which is a product of the disk and L, and this is of dimension n, the same dimension n as we needed from the beginning. But identifications are different. These are new identifications. It turns out that the manifold K, which was a suspension manifold from the beginning, is diffeomorphic to M through a diffeomorphism, which is given by that formula. And it's easy to see that this diffeomorphism grants all the identifications. So it's really a well-defined map. Then it's immediate I mean, you can just immediately see it from the formula and from the fact that G preserves volume, that the diffeomorphism F preserves volume. And again, it's because G is C infinity, F is also C infinity diffeomorphism. So the reason I need this diffeomorphism and the whole construction is the following. So I want to show that my vector field F, actually, by the way, this is, I mean, I was trying to draw a picture of the vector field X. I don't know how much it succeeded, but it's something like that. So I'm in the proof of the fact that X is divergence-free, so it preserves volume, the corresponding flow preserves volume. And the reason for that is that, remember, we had a vector field Z, which was the original vector field for the suspension flow, which was a very simple one. And it turns out that if I apply Z, if I bring the vector field Z by F to my manifold N, then what happened is that the diffeomorphism G, the vector field G, I'm sorry, would have this form. This is an easy calculation. And the difference between X and Y is that I will have to put alpha of G, I mean, I have to multiply this part by alpha, by my function alpha. And it's clear that because Z was volume preserving, F is volume preserving, Y is volume preserving, multiplying by alpha makes it volume preserving. Yeah, done. So it would preserve volume. So this is a different description of the vector field X, which essentially shows how to get it, if you wish. And it's immediate, and it also immediately tells you that this guy would preserve volume. So we're done with the first part. The second part is to show that it has non-zero Lyapunov exponent. And that's, of course, in a sense, it's one of the most difficult parts of it. Why this new vector field preserves, has non-zero Lyapunov exponent? Well, there are several ways of proving it. It can be actually proven directly. I mean, you can just take a vector and see how it goes under the flow generated by this vector field, but it's technically very difficult to do. And there is another way, technically different way of doing it, which I believe is a simpler one, and so I would like to present it. So the statement now is that all but one Lyapunov exponents of the original flow Ct generated by vector field X are non-zero. And for that, what I would like to do is I would like, remember that the Katov's diffeomorphism was a time-one map of a locally nearby a small neighborhood of the boundary. It was a time-one map of the vector field of the flow generated by the vector field V. So what I would like to do, I would like to multiply this vector field V by alpha to the power minus 1. So I just multiply it by a function, which means that I just again change the time for this flow. And I get another vector field, which I call V star X. And I take time one map of V star X, and I get another diffeomorphism, which is a G star. Okay? This is a substitution for Katov's diffeomorphism. It has all the properties of the Katov diffeomorphism, except that it does not preserve area, because I change the time, of course. Now, it's not good in terms of using it to build my final vector field, because it doesn't preserve area, but it is good enough to study Lyapunov exponents. Because what I'm going to show you is that if you start from this new diffeomorphism G star, which is almost like Katov diffeomorphism, and then go on with all the constructions that I described, build a new diffeotopy which would connect it with identity, etc., etc., build a new vector field, which would be not X, but X star, etc., etc., you come up with a new vector field, a new flow, and there is a nice relations between this new flow and the old one. And that's what I'm going to describe a little bit. So as I just said, I proceed as before, replacing G by G star. I get a diffeotopic G star. I get a new vector field, Z star, and the new manifold K star. and I have a new diffeomorphism F star. So, and it's given, and the formulas are just the same. I'm replacing old diffeotopy with a new one. And by doing this, I get all the star objects compared to the without star objects. Now, the main reason for that is that the relationship, what I'm going to consider is a new vector field Z tilde on K star is connected to X by this formula. So if to show that X has non-zero Lyapunov exponent, I need to show that Z tilde has non-zero Lyapunov exponent. Relation between Z tilde and Z star, the one that I get by starting from G star, is given by this simple formula. This is a matter of some relatively simple calculations. So what has now happened is that instead of studying the vector field X, I would like to study the vector field Z tilde, show that Z tilde has non-zero Lyapunov exponent. Then, of course, X would have non-zero Lyapunov exponent. Now, to show that Z tilde has non-zero Lyapunov exponent, I need to show that Z star, I need to show that alpha times Z star has non-zero Lyapunov exponent. Now, I know that Z star has non-zero Lyapunov exponent because it was just a standard one. I mean, it's a vector field of the suspension flow with a base to be system with non-zero exponent. So it would have non-zero Lyapunov exponent. So the only trouble here is that Z star has non-zero Lyapunov exponent, and I have to show that Z star times alpha has non-zero Lyapunov exponent. That's all I need to show. And that is a relatively simple task because what happened is that this, if you look at the stable, time stable and time unstable directions for Z tilde and for Z star, they're the same. So what can, if you start with a vector which lies, let's say, in the time unstable direction, then it will stay in this direction. And the only bad thing that can happen is that it, once it comes to the little, you know, this little neighborhoods where things are bad, it may not expand. But the average time it stays there is small because the volume of this neighborhood is very small. So, but being outside, it will expand. So that's how you get non-zero Lyapunov exponents for Z tilde. So that's what I'm saying. I mean, this the business going from G to G star is just a technical simplification of the argument because it has a nice relation between the new vector field Z tilde and through this formula with Z star with Z tilde. And so Z tilde would have non-zero Lyapunov exponents, and then so is X. So studying it directly to X is a little bit difficult because you have to then apply F star, and it spoils the picture. You don't see how vector changes when you try to follow the trajectory. So because of the action of F star, it's you don't see the distribution of cones. And if you, I mean, this F star is somehow a nice way of producing a coordinate system where the nice system of cones is clearly seen and preserved. So that's the whole idea. So that's roughly a proof of the fact that the new flow has non-zero Lyapunov exponent. And the remaining part is to show that it's Bernoulli. That's all. Then I'm done. Well, first of all, let me tell you why it's ergodic, and then from ergodicity we'll jump to Bernoulli. Well, for this reason, thanks to Keith, I don't have to explain much about partial hyperbolicity and accessibility. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to look at the flow that I have, pick time t, look at the diffeomorphism. This diffeomorphism is partially hyperbolic. It has one-dimensional central direction. And in order to study that it's ergodic, I can use all the machinery, the modern machinery, Pugh, Shoup, Burns, Wilkinson, etc., machinery, of showing that it is ergodic. Well, it does not tell me exactly why it is Bernoulli, but let's discuss it later. So what I want to show, that this system has accessibility property. So once I know that, and I'd like, at this point, I would like to mention to you again that the diffeomorphism, I mean, the construction is that the manifold we are dealing with is a manifold of the suspension flow. And there are some stable and unstable manifolds. Well, the system has non-zero Lyapunov exponent, and in general, the stable and unstable manifolds may be bad, the global ones, but as I mentioned to you earlier, in this particular case, they are okay. They form a continuous fully inference. Therefore, you can talk about, there is a way of talking about accessibility property. So you just move by pieces of stable and unstable manifold, so you can connect any two points. And you wonder whether you can connect them or not. Now, the technical proof, the formal proof of the fact that you can do it for this particular flow is not quite trivial. However, the idea is very, very simple. The idea is the following. After all, what we have is a flow which is obtained from the standard suspension flow by a diffeomorphism. Now, moving it by a diffeomorphism does not change the accessibility property. So if you start from a And there are three procedures that we do. First, we start from the standard suspension flow, which is not accessible because it's a roof function is constant. Then we apply a diffeomorphism, which does not change accessibility property whatsoever. And then we multiply by a function, which is essentially equal to 1, but it dives to 0 in a small neighborhood. So the resulting vector field, so you can... If you allow me to change this procedure around a little bit, let me start from the suspension flow, which, so maybe I draw this way. So this is my manifold, which is a D2 times the torus. And this is the suspension flow. And you jump here. So it is very well known that if I would start not from the roof function 1, but from essentially almost any function, there is an open and dense set of functions to begin of roof functions to begin with. What I'm going to have, if I start for something like that, I'm going to have a flow which would have accessibility property. That's a very well known fact. It's just unfortunate that I started from the roof function 1 not to have an accessibility property. Now, I did not have to start from something else because at some point of my construction, I multiply the function 1 by a function which is 0 here, and it's something like that. And it turns out that if you multiply the constant function by a function which vanishes on the boundary and then grows and then it's 1 here, then this function is as good as any typical function. It will give you a flow which has an accessibility problem. And the whole proof is just to show this particular fact. And essentially, that's how you get an accessibility property. Now, if you have an accessibility property, then, of course, this particular case is center bunched, et cetera, et cetera. So we have already ergodicity. And the only part which is, again, technically difficult is to show that it's Bernoulli. Why it is Bernoulli? It's a big deal about Bernoulli because, generally speaking, a partially hyperbolic system is K but may not be Bernoulli. And, I mean, you have to say something about why this is the case. And it's this lemma which says that it's not only accessible, but effectively what happened is that given a set of measure zero, you can construct a U.S. path, connect almost any two points, by a path which avoids this set of measure zero. And it is known in the business of partially hyperbolicity, that if you have a stronger property like that, that this leads you to Bernoulli. Now, I don't have time any simple way to explain why this is true. Maybe Keith and your lectures, you can kind of help me and explain this. I don't know. But, I mean, I'm not claiming a general statement like that. What I'm saying is that if you have a property like that, that there is some machinery that allows you to establish Bernoulli property. But I have no way of telling more than just that. I have just 10 minutes and something else to say, so let me skip this part. So that's how you treat the situation in the case when the dimension is bigger than 5. And there are two other cases, the dimension of 4 and 3. So let me say a few words about what to do when dimension is 3 and 4. In the case when dimension is 3, you basically do the very same construction. You start with the product of disk and a circle. And the original map is the Katok's diffeomorphism on the disk, an identity on the circle that gives you the vector field Z, the very same one as was before. And then you go to the suspension manifold and you define the vector field X using the very same diffeotropy. It's absolutely the same thing. Essentially no difference between the previous case. It's only that you don't have the torus to begin with and a loss of diffeomorphism, then you start with a circle and the identity map, and it works fine. Much more a difficult situation, substantially, it's about as difficult as the whole previous construction, is the case of when dimension is 4. Somehow 4 is the worst case. So how would you treat 4? In the case of 4, what you have is let's consider a 3 torus of dimension 3 and a circle. And let me give you some naive idea, a little bit of naive idea. So let's say we start with T4, we write it as T3 times T1, which is a circle. Here you want to have identity, and here you want to have a version of a Katok diffeomorphism. If you would have something like that, then you can just go on with the construction and everything will be fine. Unfortunately, there is no immediate version of the Katok diffeomorphism on the three-dimensional torus, or you can replace it with the three-dimensional D3. Let's say D3. Doesn't matter. Okay? So what would be a Katok version on D3? Well, the answer is the following. By Dolgopyat, result of Dolgopyat and myself, any manifold admits a diffeomorphism with non-zero Lyapunov exponent preserving volume. So we could have started with this diffeomorphism, let's call it, F, on D3, and then multiply by identity and go on. And it could have worked, except that I need to know that this diffeomorphism can be diffeotopically moved, connected to identity. And that's not quite clear. Why should it be the case? So for that reason, I'd like to do this in a little bit less, to put it a little bit differently. And the way to do it is that I start with the still Katok diffeomorphism on D2, multiplied by S1. On S1, I have rotations by some function, depending on x. And what happened is that if you look at this picture, so this is essentially a way of constructing our diffeomorphism on three-dimensional object. All you may have to do is to show that, if you consider any perturbation of this guy, which does not touch the boundary of the Katok map, namely the 3 points and the boundary of the disk. So you allow perturbation outside of this what we call singularity set. Then it turns out that, any perturbation of this type is called a gentle perturbation because you do it in a very gentle way. And it turns out that the map T is robustly accessible in that sense. So you can, if you perturb gently, then the system can, once it's accessible, it stays accessible. And therefore, using this fact and the fact that the Katok diffeomorphism on D2 can be connected by a diffeotopy with identity, you can show that the new one, the diffeomorphism T, can be connected with the identity through some diffeotopy. And then the whole construction goes through as it was in the case when dimension was bigger than 5. So thank you very much. That's the end of the story.